Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. So much rain has fallen in such a short period of time. The Florida's governor has declared a state of emergency in Broward, Collier, Lee, Miami-Dade, and Sarasota counties due to major flooding. CBS News Miami's Larry Seward is in Fort Lauderdale.
Flash flood warnings were issued for parts of Miami-Dade and Broward counties, where rainfall rates of several inches an hour submerged streets and snarled traffic. Massive flooding causing a massive headache on Interstate 95. Officials shutting part of the highway after it became too dangerous.
Several immigrant advocacy groups are suing the Biden administration over the president's crackdown on the southern border by limiting asylum processing when illegal crossings reach 2,500 per day. CBS's Camilo Montoya-Galvez with more.
The ACLU and the other groups challenging this order by the president on immigration are saying that it violates U.S. asylum law, which does allow anyone on American soil the right to request asylum, even if they enter the country illegally.
Some Russian ships and a submarine are now in Cuba for extensive military exercises in the Caribbean. CBS's David Martin at the Pentagon.
Having passed just 30 miles off Florida, a four-ship Russian flotilla pulled into Havana, led by a warship and a submarine, both armed with guided missiles and greeted by a 21-gun salute. While the submarine is nuclear-powered, U.S. officials say there's no indication it is carrying nuclear weapons.
We, of course, take it seriously, but these exercises don't pose a threat to the United States.
That's Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh. A scare in Dixon, Illinois earlier today, 100 miles west of Chicago. Three sheriff's deputies are recovering from gunshot wounds after a barricade situation. Ogle County Sheriff Brian Van Bickle.
Immediately upon entering the house, our deputies received fire from inside the house.
The deputies and the suspect who was also shot are in good condition. For this neighbor,
we've always thought this is the safest place. And now we don't know.
Dixon, Illinois is where President Ronald Reagan went to high school. A woman armed with a handgun was taken into custody after an hour-long standoff at the FBI building in Seattle. It happened in a publicly accessible area near the lobby. No one was hurt. Following a meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says there will be no cut in a key interest rate. One rate cut is predicted by the end of the year, but Powell is cautious.
Today's inflation report is encouraging, but it comes after, you know, several reports that were not so encouraging.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former President Donald Trump and current First Lady Jill Biden are both coming to Wisconsin. Jill Biden will be in Green Bay on Thursday to meet with local seniors and launch a new initiative, Seniors for Biden-Harris. Trump will be in Racine a few days later. Our battleground state has been a popular destination for both Biden and Trump in 2024, who will fight to win key points here in Wisconsin in November. Wisconsin ranks number 11 in the nation for kids' well-being. That's according to the annual Annie E. Casey Foundation Kids Count data book. Wisconsin's child poverty rate is down, but Emily Miota of Kids Forward says disparities persist.
Wisconsin remains the worst state in the nation for Black children and families.
Black children in Wisconsin are 29 times more likely to live in high-poverty areas, and they're not doing well on reading tests. Absenteeism is a problem, too. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
A close call for the crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers held on to beat the Blue Jays. Toronto had held Milwaukee scoreless until the sixth. Then the Blue Jays loaded the bases with no outs, scored three runs until closer Trevor McGill came in to shut them down in the top of the ninth. Val Guerrero at bat. Jeff Levering with the call on Valley Sports.
Fly ball center field. Perkins back. He is there. McGill, the fireman the Brewers needed on this Wednesday afternoon, and they hang on to a 5-4 win.
so the Crew wins the series 2-1. Up next, they host the Reds Friday night. NFL here at the Packers minicamp. I asked linebacker Preston Smith if the new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, lives up to his reputation as being a detail-oriented coach.
Yes, this is definitely fine detailing. Everybody has a role and everybody has a responsibility. Nobody gets a pass in no way or shape or form. I mean, you kind of know the responsibility in the run game and the pass for everybody.
That's Preston Smith with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some could be strong with lows in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, some pop-up storms around, and warm with highs in the mid-80s. Beautiful Friday, lots of sun, low 70s. It's 71 right now.
Maggie Dawn.
Next up, Matt Rothschild will be taking over the mic. He's covering day 9 of Joe Biden's top 100 topic, school vouchers.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cup, Hindi Cup, baby.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This takeover episode of Native Roots Radio is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations with guest host Christine McDonald.
It doesn't really seem like a takeover, but hey, we are partnering we are always excited to host these monthly conversations in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, to discuss American Indian relations and the important information within the biggest city in Minnesota. And I would like to pass it over to our guest host, Christine McDonald. Welcome, Christine. Good to see you.
Thank you, Robert. It's good to see you again. I can't believe it's already been a month. So, Bushu, Ogedaki, Gavuik, Nindishnakaz, Ajijak, Nindindem. I am Christine McDonald. I am Anishinaabe and Hunkpapa, and I'm also the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. So today we're going to be talking about neighborhood organizations. There are many ways to get involved in any of Minneapolis's 69 neighborhood organizations. Joining us to talk about that is Victoria Belko and Luke Gannon. Victoria is with the City of Minneapolis and is a neighborhood specialist, and Luke is from East Phillips Improvement Coalition. Thank you for joining our show today.
Thank you for having us.
And we're going to jump right into questions. I'll start with Victoria. Can you tell our audience a little bit about you and how you got started working with the City of Minneapolis in neighborhoods?
Sure. So who I am is a person who's worked in the community for my whole career. I've been an advocate for families and youth in various different ways. And it's something that's really, really important to me. And my goal in life is to make sure that youth and families and neighborhoods have environments where folks can thrive. And that is kind of my mission in life. And so using that as my angle of how I do my work, I, as a parent, started to be involved in the neighborhood that I bought my house in North Minneapolis. As I started to be volunteering in different areas and events was happening and kind of getting into the knows what's happening is how I got myself more involved in neighborhood work, what's happening, how to be involved, volunteers on lots of different areas within my neighborhood and in my son's school education and that kind of stuff. And then I, through all those works from personal and volunteering, that I became the executive director of my neighborhood association. And through that work is how my relationship with the city kind of built. And then now I am a neighborhood sports specialist with the City of Minneapolis.
Can you tell me about what a neighborhood support specialist does?
What we do is that we are on the neighborhoods team, and there are, as you said earlier, there are 69 recognized neighborhood organizations across the city. There's actually 83 neighborhoods, but 69 of those, but some of the neighborhoods are combined together, so it's actually 69 organizations that represent the 83 neighborhoods across the city. And what we do as a neighborhood support specialist is support the work of those neighborhoods and those leadership, those boards, those residents, and through their contracts, the programs and services they provide, we are the support behind the scenes that support the work that goes out into the neighborhoods from the leaders of the neighborhoods.
Thank you. Luke, can you tell our audience about what you do?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for being here again. So I am the Program Engagement Director for the East Phillips Improvement Coalition, and I'm one of those recognized neighborhoods that Victoria is talking about. It's East Phillips is in South Minneapolis. And I do a whole host of things, but my job is really about bringing organizations within the East Phillips community together. We like to say that we're really the connective tissue between these organizations and between the residents of East Phillips. So we have, EPIC has been around since the 90s, I believe. The Phillips used to be one larger neighborhood, and the city split the neighborhoods into four neighborhoods. So now there are four Phillips neighborhoods. And so EPIC was officially started, I think, in the late 90s. And I just started as a part-time staff member, not full-time, part-time staff member last year. So I actually haven't been here for very long. But I have been volunteering for quite some time, and I originally got started in just neighborhood organizing with the Roof Depot fight, which is the Roof Depot is on in East Phillips on 28th and Hiawatha. It's a project that the community is trying to turn into an indoor hydroponics, aquaponics, urban farm, community hub, low-income housing, just like all of these great things that residents of East Phillips have been wanting and have been fighting for. So I volunteered there for a number of years, and that project was actually born out of EPIC, the East Phillips Improvement Coalition, which I didn't know until a couple of years ago. But it feels like a full circle. So yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Do you know how many staff EPIC has?
Oh, yes. So it's just two part-time staff right now, me and my colleague Harumi, and we're in the process of hiring one other person who will be working on development partnerships. But it's a very small organization. We're trying to do capacity building right now, so writing grants where we can build out our staff.
That is so cool. Thank you. Victoria, what exactly are neighborhood organizations?
Well, neighborhood organizations, the ones that are recognized by the city of Minneapolis, are their own independent 501(c) nonprofit organization. So each one has their own autonomy of kind of what they do. They are the organization that represents the specific neighborhood that they are located in. So you have, some have multiple neighborhoods that they all have, or North Minneapolis might have Victory has Victory Neighborhood Association, Falwell Neighborhood has Falwell Neighborhood Associations. And they are the organization that provides services and programming to the Pacific residents in their geographic boundary is what they do.
Do you know, are neighborhood organizations a new concept, or how long have they been around?
Neighborhood organizations have been receiving city funds, NRP funds, from the city of Minneapolis for about 30 years. So it's been a long time. Neighborhood organizations have been around for a really long time.
Oh. What kind of things do neighborhood organizations do for their community?
They do a variety of things, and each neighborhood is different. That's why it's a really cool and unique situation, is because each neighborhood might have, some neighborhoods might have more renters than homeowners and such. So they may do renter type of programming to assist renters in renter resources, renter rights, knowing what their rights are. Some have more homeownership in their neighborhoods, and so they may have programming around how to do down payment assistance to help folks purchase homes, or do home improvement loans to help folks improve their housing stock in the neighborhood, and do a home improvements because things are so costly. They could be youth program services, could be employment services, all different kinds of programming, environmental programming, community gardens that bring folks together and engage folks through and meeting each other, you know, building relationships. There's a variety of different things that neighborhood organizations do, and they're all unique to their neighborhood, and they are to make sure they represent the neighborhood. So neighborhood boards and the leadership should be having programming that actually are impactful for that specific neighborhood that they're in.
So the projects and the funding that each neighborhood gets and how they spend it, do they all do the same thing or are they different for each neighborhood?
They're all different. So each neighborhood gets a set funding that just kind of takes care of operations costs. But then they have, from the city of Minneapolis, they have NRP funds, which is neighborhood revitalization programming funds that they may have had strategies on for over the, you know, for years. They have different phases through that, phase one, phase two, phase three. And those are unique to that neighborhood. And they're not the same. Each neighborhood is definitely different. And then they have equity funds to be able to do equity plans and equity work. And those, again, are plans and funds that they have to lay out to the city of Minneapolis so we can see what their goals are, the mission are, and making sure they're meeting the needs of the neighborhood. So it definitely is unique to the neighborhood.
That is awesome. I didn't know all that funding was there. Thank you. We are going to be taking a quick break here.
Hey, we're listening to Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. We'll be right back with host Christine McDonald. Stay with us.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune into Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program or TAP is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. That's 612-373-3333.
Hi, I'm Chuck Manette, owner of Native Concrete and Masonry. With concrete and masonry adding substantial value to your home, it's always a great idea to repair your sidewalks or just add a beautiful new patio. Cracks or heaving in your sidewalks due to tree roots can be dangerous. Native Concrete and Masonry has helped clients across the metro to make their outdoor space safer and helped increase the value to their homes. For patios, sidewalks, driveways, or garage slabs, go to nativeconcretemasonry.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. Thank you. Today we are talking about neighborhood organizations in the City of Minneapolis. And we have Victoria Belko, who is a neighborhood support specialist with the Neighborhood and Community Relations Department in the City of Minneapolis. And we have Luke Gannon, who is the director of East Phillips Improvement Coalition in South Minneapolis. And EPIC is actually, East Phillips is actually home to the largest population of American Indians living in the City of Minneapolis. Luke, can you tell us, how does East Phillips Improvement Coalition work with the community?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a big question because it plays out in so many different ways. And, you know, we have so many residents here of different cultures, of different religions, of different backgrounds, experiences that all have different needs, right? Mm-hmm. So there are so many different committees and projects and initiatives that we have worked on in the past that we're working on now. But one of the great things about these neighborhood organizations, and one of the reasons that I love working with them, is they're really about being responsive to what the community wants and what they want to see. And so I'm just going to name a couple of things that we've been doing recently. So we have a sort of AIR committee. East Phillips has historically and currently has pretty bad air pollution. And so I, along with EPIC staff and board members and tons of community members, have organized this committee around making ways for our air to be cleaner. And so one of those is getting some of the polluting foundries out of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that has just been, it's like, you know, living here can be really hard sometimes because there are so many negative, you know, constantly, like whether it's air pollution or traffic pollution, there's a lot of pollution around us. But the beautiful thing about it is people come together and are able to like create this amazing community around making mm-hmm. their communities healthier. And that is what we've seen over and over again in East Phillips. So that's one example. Another example is we have just amazing gardens and urban farms in East Phillips. So on one of your ads, you mentioned Four Sisters Food Sovereignty, which is a wonderful organization. We partner with them. We actually just partnered with them for our annual election meeting, which is super cool. It's like one of the ways that EPIC works together is we partner with organizations in the neighborhood who are doing great things. So they did a seedling giveaway and we hosted our elections. Yeah. And it was just this big, beautiful event. And then EPIC also has their own community garden plot. So we have over 30 plots in our garden and community members. So all East Phillips residents can have one. We give preference to people who either are renters and can't plant where they live or who, you know, don't have enough space or too much shade. And there's just like a great community that's built around this, you know, idea of food sovereignty. And someone on the board has recently started a safety committee. So we're hoping to get more people involved in that. That's been a real concern recently in the neighborhood. Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say is another board member has started a clean and green committee. That's the working title right now. But it's about one of the things that we constantly hear from residents, too, is about trash in the community and about litter. And, you know, you walk down a lot of streets and there aren't trash cans. And mm-hmm. so, you know, when there aren't trash cans, of course, there's probably going to be trash on the streets. And so part of it is around just like, OK, how can we get creative about putting trash cans in places and, you know, doing murals on them and making them, you know, and maybe doing some, you know, signage in different languages. Mm-hmm. And even having a compost one. So kind of like an informative way to do that too. And then it's, you know, also the Green Committee because it's just too about beautifying some of the spaces that are not being used in the East Phillips neighborhood. So those are some of the ways.
Yeah, those two committees are really important committees. The Clean and Green, so that is going to, and the intention is to have that be a year-round efforts, because exactly. I know you guys have a really cool annual event that's called the Clean Sweep. I believe. It's an opportunity for folks to come out and volunteer and help clean up the neighborhood. What time of the year does that happen?
So that happens in October. It's typically late October. It'll change. It's on a Saturday, so usually like the last Saturday in October. Mm-hmm. And it is a wonderful event. The community loves it. It's been going on for 20 plus years, I believe, at this point.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah. And so what happens is we partner with the city of Minneapolis to get dumpsters, and the four Phillips neighborhoods all work together. And it's just like a big celebratory day where everyone comes out. The city provides the bags and the trash picker uppers. And people take a few hours in the morning. They get assigned a street and they walk around and clean up their street. And then the night before, people can also take anything out of their house, like, you know, old mattresses or things like that, that they just need to get rid of. That sometimes can be difficult to get rid of.
Oh, you only get so many takes a year to get rid of stuff.
And so that's been a really successful day. We're just trying to figure out ways, how can we make this, you know, more frequent, and how can we continuously clean up the community? So even having like a big dumpster once a month that people can put it, you know, put their old stuff into. And then, yeah, these trash cans on the streets.
And then that actually, that community building is so important to public safety. You know, one thing we know is that when your neighbors know each other and you're looking out for each other, that improves safety in your community. Just being able to be outside, have conversations, know each other, participate in community events like clean sweep. So with the public safety committee, how are neighbors able to get involved with that?
Just a quick comment on that, because I think you're exactly right. Like, this topic of safety is so interconnected with all of these other topics, right? And the thing that I've experienced that I like about Clean Sweep most is that I get assigned to clean up a street with people, neighbors I might have never met before. And I get the opportunity to connect with them and clean up a street with them, which just feels so good. And yeah, creating that sense of community, like creating that sense of place, is exactly what keeps, you know, your neighborhood safe if you know one another. And so for the safety committee, it's just getting started. So it will kind of depend on, you know, what the residents of East Phillips are looking to have. But there have been, tragically, there have been a couple of homicides in East Phillips in the last 4 months. And so there are, you know, real concerns about that. And so there's just going to be organizing around that. I'm not sure how that's going to play out yet.
Okay. But they can reach out to the neighborhood organization if they want to get involved in
help
build it out. And
Feel free to email, come to office hours if you want to get involved.
And so with your work at EPIC, what does the neighborhood mean to you personally?
Yeah, that's such a good question. East Phillips is such a unique place because we have such a diversity of cultures here.
It's actually the most diverse neighborhood in the city of Minneapolis.
Such a diversity of religions, of ages. We have quite a large youth population here. Languages, you know, we have Spanish speakers. We have a ton of Spanish speakers here, a ton of Somali speakers here. And I think that sense of diversity, and not only that, but the willingness of people here to learn from each other and to share those experiences, makes it so unique. And the other thing I'll add is we have so many like small organizations here that are so dedicated to make to the community. And I'll just say one example, Tamales y Bicicletas is such an incredible organization who's just done so much. They have a greenhouse in East Phillips and they host a number of workshops and events. Four Sisters is another example. There are so many, though, who are just like so dedicated to East Phillips and the population here. And they're also so willing to work together. And that is so beautiful.
Do you have, you mentioned the languages. How do you reach out to folks in different languages with that many different languages being spoken in the community?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at our events and our community meetings, so we host community meetings once a month, and we have a Spanish translator there. We are working on increasing our number of Somali people.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Tom Allball Show. CBS News Brief. Heavy rain across southern Florida floods streets and even entire neighborhoods. A state of emergency has been declared for five counties. Weather Channel meteorologist Mike Bennis.
We still have isolated areas of up to a foot of rain still to go, but widespread areas in South Florida of at least 3 to 5 more inches of rain in our forecast. Lesser amounts the farther north you go through the state.
President Biden faces the first lawsuit by a coalition of immigrant advocacy groups over his new asylum crackdown at the southern border. CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez.
These new measures by the Biden administration also were not properly and sufficiently justified by officials.
The order would limit asylum processing once encounters with migrants between ports of entry reach 2,500 per day. In northern Illinois, three sheriff's deputies are recovering after being shot during a barricade situation in Dixon. Ogle County Sheriff Brian Van Vickle.
The suspect was also struck by gunfire and transported to a local hospital.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Staff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin DNR issued an air quality advisory for five lakeside counties on Wednesday. Milwaukee, Kenosha, Ozaukee, Racine, and Sheboygan counties are under a moderate advisory for sensitive groups from noon until 11 p.m. That means people sensitive to air pollution, like children, the elderly, and those with lung diseases, should avoid prolonged and heavy activity outside. The economy is the number one issue for American voters. Political scientist Susan Webiaki says housing could be the, quote, sleeper issue of the election.
I can't afford the American dream, right? And you're trying to sell that to young folks in America and sell your vision of tomorrow, and you can't afford the American dream.
Political scientist Barry Burden says most swing voters this year are young adults. The two spoke at a WISC Politics luncheon on Tuesday. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Staff, and this is Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. If you're a John Grisham fan, you might have something binge-watchable right around the corner. USA Network announced it will turn Grisham's 1995 novel, The Rainmaker, into a series. The book was also made into a movie of the same name in 1997. The film was directed by Francis Ford Coppola and starred Matt Damon. Variety reports that the TV series will continue with similar themes of David versus Goliath legal situations. Can you imagine sleeping through a fire? Henry Winkler almost did. The Fonz was staying at a hotel in Dublin when the fire alarm went off, and it was not a false alarm. Winkler initially thought it was the clock radio alarm he was hearing that had been set by the room's previous guest. He tried to go back to sleep and finally woke when six fire engines showed up from the Dublin Brigade to put out an electrical fire. Winkler praised the fire department's quick response and took a selfie with them. Ironically, he slept through his actual alarm the next day. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some could be strong with lows in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, some pop-up storms around, and warm with highs in the mid-80s. Beautiful Friday, lots of sun, low 70s. It's 71 right now.
WAUK is excited to see you at the Waukesha County Airport this Friday for another Food Truck Friday. This week is sponsored by Paul McAllister with volunteers from the Stars and Stripes Honor Flight on hand. Enjoy lunch from Slow Motion Barbecue and Cochina Filipino Food Trucks right on the ramp at Kreitz Field. It's a fun lunch break and something just a little different to kick off the weekend. Come experience some great local food trucks and spend some time at the airport with 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Matt Mayer on air.
I've never played this game. Uno is great because kids can play against adults without being overmatched, and adults can play it together and still have fun.
Robert from McFarland flipped a table during an Uno game.
Maybe this is why I don't play these games.
Oh, I would love to play Uno with you.
You want to have an Uno fest?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We could, like, have an Uno fest for charity or something?
That'd be cool.
Matt Mayer on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome documentary filmmaker and comedian Michael Alexander for part two of his interview about his film Out of the Loop. And Mike Clemens joins the show to discuss all things Wisconsin sports.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights 7 till 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back to Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And today we are talking with Victoria Belko, who is a Neighborhood Support Specialist with the Neighborhood and Community Relations Department, and Luke Gannon, who is the Director of Program Engagement at East Phillips Improvement Coalition. And go right back into our conversation. Victoria, would you please let us know more about why you got involved in your neighborhood organization and what reasons we can help encourage other folks to become involved in their organizations?
One reason why I got involved is to make a difference. You know, being involved in neighborhood organizations, you get to meet new people who have passion about the stuff that you're passionate about. You get to be able to connect with your neighbors. You get to know who your neighbors are. And you get to be able to utilize skill sets that you have to share and volunteer out to others, and then learn from other people. And so I got involved because I just wanted to be more part of my neighborhood and make a change and make a difference in the neighborhood that I actually reside in. And there's a variety of ways to do that, like joining committees, being on boards, volunteering for an event. You know, you can do that instead of like doing a whole committee and being committed to this committee work. You could be like, hey, I don't want to do committee work, but this event that's a music in the park happening, I want to volunteer on that. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a part of that. And so I can come and set up chairs, and I can come and, you know, or sit out and do flyers to hand out flyers to folks about information about what the neighborhood is doing or what resources we're providing. There's a variety of different ways to get involved, and I just think it's a way to connect and a way to feel as if you are connected to your neighbors and feel more useful in your neighborhood to be connected.
Do you have a favorite thing that you did when you were at Victory that you worked on that you would like to share?
I think the thing that I liked the most was a community food garden that we put together. Beforehand, we had an environmental committee who worked on like plants and different environmental type of stuff. But the food garden was something that was a way to bring other folks out of the neighborhood into the neighborhood organization, into a community space, and be able to grow food and learn from each other and educate each other. And we had families and youth and a lot of different things happening around growing food and sustainability. And so the food garden was something that means a lot to me, and it continues to thrive right now as we speak.
So how did their food garden work? Did they have to pay to be involved? Was it free for them? Did they have to plant their own food? Was there education on how to plant a garden?
Well, we set it up with that we paid, the City of Minneapolis had a plot of land, and so they were reapplied to be able to utilize the garden on that plot of land. And what you do is those folks who are going to utilize the community garden, part of the agreement is that it's primarily for folks who either don't have food, a place to grow food on, so people who live in apartment buildings and other stuff like that, or rental places where, like Luke had said earlier, that they're not able to plant because the property owners let them mm-hmm. plant or things like that, or you just don't have enough space to plant. But those are the folks that get the initial priority over the community garden. And so it was free for folks because we were able to get the money from the neighborhood organization to fund the garden. And then this was a staging place. A lot of volunteers got kickbacks from the neighborhood, from their organization they work for volunteer hours. Then some donations came in to be able to continue funding that neighborhood community garden. And so they worked with various different partnerships on getting plants for folks to be able to plant and seeds and that kind of stuff. And then folks worked together on actually building out the plots, and they raised garden beds, and folks donated time and energy and funds to be able to get the wood out there. We had the folks with the saws and all that kind of stuff mm-hmm. and filling everything up and then planting and learning from each other. And we had master gardeners teaching folks how to plant food and how to grow food. And then folks who were part of that garden committee were, you know, volunteer weekly out there to maintain it and grow with each other and teach and learn and things like that is how that garden works.
Yeah, that sounds so inclusive. I mean, you touched just a little bit on it, but the inclusivity and the accessibility, I didn't know that there were raised gardens available for folks who might have mobility issues. Mm-hmm. That is really neat to hear. There was another thing that I
was kind of wanting more information about, and that's the Partnership Engagement Fund, what that is and how that works and how community members can participate in that fund.
Oh, yeah. The Partnership Engagement Fund is a new source of funding for community-based organizations. So it's a separate funding from neighborhood organizations. And it's to uplift diverse voices to make sure that they're being heard and be able to do really fun, really cool and different projects and meet the needs of residents that may have not been met through other organizations or through neighborhood work. Is what the Partnership Engagement Fund is. And what they do is you don't have to be your own nonprofit. You can be individual. You could have a project you're working on with a group of people, and then you partner with a neighborhood organization who would be your nonprofit person and your fiscal agent, and therefore you are able to provide services or a program that is approved. You have to go through application process to be able to get the funding, but people do really cool different projects that normally are not done through neighborhood organizations. So it really lets uplift the voices of individuals and smaller groups of folks who really want to do impactful work and they need funding to be able to start that up or expand their programming to do so. And that's what that fund is about.
What kind of programming is eligible and how much money could you potentially get for your project?
It depends on the funding sources. Each year, the funding structure is a little bit different. But I think it's up to $20,000 based on you have to go through application process. And there's community reviewers review your application to see if you're able to meet the criteria to be able to apply. But you have to be, you know, partner with the neighborhood organization. But a variety of projects have been funded. I mean, we have a lot of art projects. Something that happened over there in Phillips neighborhood actually is the Semia Center for Healing Arts actually did a project over there. And they're off of Bloomington is where they did their project where they were putting artwork and up doing youth engagement and youth empowerment and helping youth have a voice and making sure that they are heard, and they do that through murals and different artworks and beautifying the neighborhood. And so that's happening over there on Bloomington Avenue. So if you go down Bloomington, you'll see murals around mm-hmm. and little things on the light posts. Those are all done through the art project there. And they kind of uplift the youth who are in the neighborhood, have their voices heard. Other projects that has happened would be right there in Little Earth. There was that, I think Luke talked a little bit about the urban farming that's happening in mm-hmm. Little Earth. And yes. So that project there, which is a great project where you actually have an orchard out there and folks are growing great food and you have healing spaces and sweat lodges and they are growing tons of different food. They do native medicines like sage and lemongrass and that kind of stuff. There's definitely sweetgrass. There's definitely different projects that are happening that are all like unique to the neighborhood organizations and unique to the neighborhoods that are being funded out there. And they really are impactful and they're creative, and the Partnership Engagement Fund kind of allows for a different creativity than folks have seen in a more traditional neighborhood organization programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You did mention the applications are reviewed by community reviewers.
Correct.
Can you tell me what that is? And if somebody wanted to be a part of that process, is there an application for that? How do they get connected to participate in that?
So yeah, once a year, once the applications come in, so for next year, the 2025 will start opening for January, will be the applications for folks who are interested in applying for partnership engagement funds. And then when we get those applications in, we do a call out for neighborhoods and community. So it could be residents, neighborhood organizations, community members. We want as much people who are in community, youth, people of color, you know, young folks, elders, you know, to come in. And you can, we put out a link through the website and you can sign up on the Gov Delivery to be of a reviewer and have an interest in being a reviewer. And then you come into the office and meet with other folks and we provide you lunch and we hang out all afternoon and you read the different proposals and grade the criteria and therefore review to make sure that it is equitable and the projects are weak within the criteria and that community gets to review and say, yes, this project sounds great, or this one does not meet the needs or doesn't meet the criteria, but it's community who is determining those applications and programs, projects to be funded. So it's community who wants these projects out there.
I really love that aspect, knowing that it's your community, it's your neighbors that are helping to decide where the funds are going.
Yes. It's not left up to government bureaucrats like us that are going to say, this is worthy, this isn't worthy, but it's your neighborhood, it's your community. So you have the buy-in happening when you start those projects. Yeah. I love that aspect, community reviewers. So I'm going to move on to Luke. So do you want to let us know why people should consider getting into their neighborhood organization, what kind of things that people can get involved in from your perspective?
Yes, absolutely. Gosh, I just think, like, I love going outside and walking down. One of my favorite things to do in the summer, maybe not in the winter in Minneapolis, is walking down the streets and seeing everyone on their porches outside and saying hello, having a short, you know, 5-minute conversation with people, right? To get that kind of connection, to get to know your neighbors. And I just feel like the reason to get involved in your neighborhood is everyone wants like a sense of self-determination. They want a sense of knowing what's going to happen in their neighborhood and having a say in what's going to happen. And so if you have, you know, outside developers coming in who haven't even talked to the community about their development project and do something or a business, and then it's bad on both ends because you have a community that doesn't want something. And you also have, say, a new business that no one goes to. So just like having for people who might be interested in getting involved, or my, I guess, pitch to people would be like, if you want to say in what's going to happen in your neighborhood, like you have that power, you have that. And like, we want to hear your voice. And I just think it's so important to bring people's voices up. And so to do that, we just launched a new website, so you can see it at phillipsunited.org and sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Thank you.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Dive into a world where tradition meets innovation, satire meets symbolism, and Native American art takes center stage. All My Relations Arts and the Native American Community Development Institute proudly unveil Alter Native by Frank Buffalo Hyde. Alter Native is an electrifying exhibition that uses satire to push boundaries and demand a closer look at the vibrant complexities of Native identity in today's world. So embrace the unexpected and challenge norms with Alter Native by Frank Buffalo Hyde, showing now at All My Relations Arts in Minneapolis. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
Howl!
Why must the world be so cold? They've gone against what was told. Thinking rape is cool? Think about it. They think it's not wrong. Violence against women, the rape, the abuse, the emotional, physical. They all hold the hate. Think about it. Is it right or wrong? What attracts you? I'm not saying no names, but you laugh. Talk about it like nothing is wrong. Think about it. They all hold the hate. Gotta stop the violence. Stop the hate. Think about it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Good evening. Welcome back. Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. We are having our conversation with Victoria Belko, who is a Neighborhood Support Specialist with the Neighborhood Community Relations Department, and with Luke Gannon, who is the Director of Program and Engagement with the East Phillips Improvement Coalition. Go right back into our conversation. Luke, has EPIC done any work with the Native community in South Minneapolis, seeing that it is home to the highest population of American Indians in the city of Minneapolis?
Yes, and that's a great question. We have. So in the past, I know Victoria mentioned or talked about the Partnership Engagement Funds, and another one of those that we did is with the Native Youth Arts Collective, and that the idea behind that one was to give youth at Little Earth who were interested in art, who wanted to be artists, typically young kids, basically like art packages where they would be able to, if they couldn't afford it, they could be able to just make art at home. And that ran, I think, in 2021, and it was a super successful project. More recently, it ended maybe 3 months ago now, we did a youth redesign workshop or series of workshops, the redesign of East Phillips in Cedar Park, because the park board right now is planning on redesigning them. So they're doing a community engagement process, and we partnered with them on that. And we did that with youth in the neighborhood, but specifically with Little Earth teenagers. It was all teenagers who engaged in this 3-workshop series and basically gave their ideas and their visions for how they wanted the 2 parks to look like, what they wanted to be there. And that was just an amazing, successful project. We ended up with a big report, a big mural of what they wanted in the parks that we presented to the park board, and that they presented to the park board, really, which was great. And what else? At the EPIC Community Garden, we partner with Dream of Wild Health, who has a couple of plots there, and they have done workshops there in the past. And we also work very closely with the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute, who have 2 board members who are Little Earth residents and who just have a vision for urban farming that's very rooted in indigenous practices and leadership. Mm-hmm.
So just quick, do you have any Native board members on EPIC?
We do. We have 1 Native board member on EPIC.
Nice. Okay, yeah. So there is always room for people to apply and become a board member.
Yes.
And with that, Victoria, would you be able to tell us more about what a board member does with a neighborhood organization?
Yeah, board members play an important role in neighborhood organizations. They are the governing body over the neighborhood organization because they're a 501(c). So by law, you have to have a board of directors. And they really direct the high-level work of the neighborhood organization. And some organizations have staff and have executive directors who then direct the work. Some have contractors who contract a specific area of work to do for the organization. But the board of directors, they're the ones who are the leaders of the organization and really make sure that the organization is adhering to its mission, its goals, and do the high level, making sure that the program and services are meeting the needs of the neighborhood and the organization. So it's a really important role to be part of the board. It's a very impactful place to be. And people are always looking for new board members. And board directors for these neighborhood organizations are actually made up of community members. So you have to either live in the neighborhood or own a business in the neighborhood, work in the neighborhood, but it is the residents of the neighborhood who are the leaders of the organization driving the work.
That's awesome. Can you tell us how, if somebody wanted to run for a seat, how would they do that?
What you would do is you would contact the neighborhood organization that you want to be the board on and ask when their board elections are. And each neighborhood organization has an annual election for board election, so it's annually. And then see what the neighborhood organization has for open seats, and then ask to run for the board. And each neighborhood organization has their own ways, bylaws of how they run their annual meetings and how you get on the board. But so it's individual through each organization, but it is made up of neighborhood members. So contact the organization. Hey, I want to run for the board. Mm-hmm. When's your annual meeting? When is it? When are seats open? and then do a board election where a lot is, it's the neighborhood votes you in. So you kind of tell who you are, why you want to run for the neighborhood organization, why you'd be good for this role. And then the neighborhoods vote, the neighborhood residents vote for the board members to be placed on the board.
So these, I think earlier in the conversation, it was mentioned that the each neighborhood organization is an actual 501c nonprofit organization, and they definitely have a charter. So it is really a pretty formal process to be voted in, and it has term limits. It has, what do you call it, like, if you voted in, you're seated for a year, 2 years,
each organization is different to how they seat their stuff, but board members cannot be on the board longer than 6 years consecutively, is how the city, for the city funding for the neighborhood organization. But outside of that, the neighborhood could do it, you know, 1 year, or is it 2 years? It depends on how they want to run it, but you can't be on there longer than 6 years, which allows for more folks to be able to be on boards, more folks to be able to be a participant, and not stagnate the board work.
Is it typically a highly competitive process, or is it kind of like, are you operating as on a full board, or are there vacancies?
There are some, you know, organizations who have bigger boards than others. Each neighborhood organization is different. Some have large boards and they have a lot of folks trying to run, and some folks have smaller boards and open seats, and whoever runs gets placed, because that's how it showed up. So it's a kind of who shows up and what the openings are, but it's not too competitive, you know. But it's, we want community members to be on the boards to lead the work.
So do all organizations have the same number of board members? Do they get the same amount of funding?
No, each neighborhood organization, because they are their own 501c, they have their own bylaws, their own rules, and their own ways of how they structure their nonprofit organization. So based on that is how the board members are. So some might have a board of 15, while some have 7. And that all depends on that neighborhood structure of how they chose to individually as a nonprofit put together their board.
Can you tell us how people can connect with their neighborhood organization?
Yeah. One of the best ways to go on the city webpage, we have a city webpage where we have the, I can put the link on radio. Go to the city webpage where we have a neighborhood page where it pops up all of the neighborhoods in the city of Minneapolis, and you just click on the link that has your neighborhood, and then that props up their information, the contact information, their email, their website, that kind of stuff, to be able to get involved in your neighborhood.
Okay, so it's easy to find. You can go to the city website, MinneapolisMN.gov, and you can search for neighborhood organization.
Yeah, you can go to our neighborhood page, through the NCR page, and then look for it under neighborhoods, and they will pop up the map, and you can click on the neighborhood organizations.
A map. So if you don't know what your neighborhood organization name is, you'll be able to find it on the website as well.
Yeah, so there's a map on the left side of the webpage, and then there's all the list of the organizations on the right, so I'm able to match you up.
That is cool. That makes it easy.
Yeah.
Luke, so how can people get involved specifically with EPIC?
Yes. So we have our office located on Bloomington Avenue. It's right in East Phillips, kind of on the border between East and Midtown Phillips. And we're here. You can walk into the office and hang out with us if you want during the week and ask us questions and see how you can get involved. You also can call us. If you look up the East Phillips Improvement Coalition, you'll find a number, and you can give us a ring or email us. We'll respond to you as quickly as we can. Or you can just go to our website and sign up for our newsletter if you just want news updates.
And did you say that office was staffed 5 days a week?
It is 4 days a week.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. I want to thank you guys for joining me this afternoon. We had a great conversation with Victoria.
This is the Shaw, WAUK. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. On the road with Jane and Todd. The tour continues. Next stop, Shift Cyclery and Coffee Bar in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Stop in for a coffee with Jane Matinair and Todd Albaugh.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Flood risk can change over time, and a community's flood insurance rate map shows how those risks could affect you. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has developed preliminary flood insurance rate maps for Washington County. FEMA also provides an appeals process for anyone with information that may change their flood hazard determination. To view maps, find a property's risk level, and details on the appeals process, please visit dnr.gov. wi.gov and search Washington County flood maps. This message is brought to you by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and FEMA.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to The Shaw,
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.